Okay. Yeah. So, starting a new topic tonight. The topic was somewhat left in the open, somewhat vague, but we had a topic, and the topic, as we called it, was what really happened and what does it mean to me? So I wanted tonight to try to introduce the new series that we're going to embark upon, introduce the topic, introduce, you know, what I want to do with this topic. And I guess in short, what I want to do is look at the Chumash and go through, whether it be stories in the Chumash or common Midrashim, which we've probably heard many of them, which typically we have a very, very superficial or childish understanding of, based on just that we learned it as 3, 4, 5-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and then we don't really look back at it afterwards, and show how there's so much more depth and so much more meaning, both in terms of the concepts and even practically, to all these stories, all these Midrashim. That's my goal. We might take, you know, it's a simple story in the Chumash, you might take a pasuk which is very vague, you might take a medrash, and we're going to try to delve into it a little bit and see the different layers of meaning. So that's how I want to approach this topic. But tonight I want to kind of introduce the whole idea. Because we look at the Chumash sometimes and we neglect to see the layers of meaning you have behind a pasuk or behind the story. I want to address that issue. You know, the as I call it, the preschool understanding that we have sticks with us. And even if as adults we've heard other interpretations or explanations of different events in Chumash, still our baseline understanding is based on that preschool understanding we had, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. And those understandings obviously are not what the Chumash means. There's a basic level, but you know, as we grow, we have to see that the Chumash has much more depth and the stories have much more to offer us. And it's funny because in life in general, we rethink many things. You know, an idea you heard as a 10-year-old, you rethought again when you were 20, 30, 40, 50, rethink these things. Whether it be a political view, a philosophy, an approach to life, an approach to parenting, an approach to friendship, the things we always rethink. But when it comes to Chumash, we often don't rethink anything. We say, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was presented coals and gold, he went for the gold, and then the Malach pushed him to the coals. We know that story, and that's as far as it goes. And we rarely think back, is that really as simple as it sounds? Is that what it means? I mean, we have to address that. There's a pasuk, it says, it's in Hazino, I believe. It says, Lo dover reku mikem. So literally it means that the Torah, there's nothing empty about the Torah. In Chazal make a drasha, they say, V'im reku, and if you think the Torah is empty, mikem hu reik, it's empty because of you. I mean, there's nothing empty in the Torah, whether it be a pasuk, a story, a medrash, it's all full of meaning. There's infinite wisdom and infinite content in that story. And if we look at it as if it's empty, so the emptiness is in us, it's not in the Torah. It's our fault. So, in lo dover reku mikem, v'im reku mikem hu reik. It's reik from with you, it's from within you, it's not reik on its own right, it's not empty on its own right. So we have to see the purpose and the infinite layers of meaning every story in the Torah. So let's pass this around. I want to go through a few sources about this. I can just take a packet. Save it for myself. Thank you. Always very thankful for myself. So I have a few sources here. What we'll look at dealing with this issue. The first one on the front page here, it says in Taparshas Noach, and this is actually just an excerpt from Yesodei Torah, which is a Sefer of Lapyansky put together. It's not his own personal writing, but he was Malachi. He gathered together different Rishonim discussing important topics of Hashkafa throughout the Chumash. So it was just an easy place for me to get this quote. This is from the Rambam, actually. The top piece here is from Mor Nevuchim. And the Rambam addresses this issue. The Rambam has an entire perek in Mor Nevuchim where he takes stories in the Chumash, which we may feel are kind of extra, redundant, boring, meaningless, and he tries to show what is the meaning behind that story. Now, the Rambam will do it at his own level. The Rambam typically will take on a very, very pshat-oriented level. Other Sfarim will take on a deeper level, a level of drush or sod, something a little bit deeper, something with a little more content behind it. But let's read this Rambam together. It's an important idea for the Rambam. And that gives us the opening in to this entire topic. Yeah. Plenty of space. So Rambam says, "Yesh kan devarim shem sisrei Torah gamkin, kvar nichshul behem rabim v'sarach levarim." So there are things here which are secrets of Torah, and people make mistakes about them, and I have to explain them. V'hem elu ha-sipurim asher sufru b'Torah. These are the stories the Torah tells. Asher yachshivu rabim she'en ta'olos b'zichram. That many think there is no benefit in their mention. Kesapro histoya from mishpachos menoach shmosam v'kamosam. For instance, at the end of Parshas Noach, you have an entire description of all of the descendants of Noach, their names, the geography of where they went to live. And we think, like, what does that mean to me nowadays? It's interesting history, maybe, at best. But what does it mean to us? V'chein b'nei Serachori. You look at the end of Parshas Vayishlach. So that there is an arichus, there's a long description of Esav's descendants. And beyond that, it even describes Seir HaChori, who is a mechutin of Esav. And it goes through his descendants. And then it kind of shows like how the families marry into each other, and who are their sisters-in-law, and who are their nephews. I mean, it's a whole description that seems just so out there, so irrelevant. We have the names of the kings that ruled in the land of Edom, Esav's kings, and similar stories like that. So we know that Menashe, who was a terrible Rasha, one of the worst of all the kings, not the worst of all the kings, so besides being a terrible king, you know, he was known to be also a Talmud Chacham, who used his wisdom for the negative. And he used to sit down and make drushas of the Torah. He would take these different parshas of the Torah, which seemed to be meaningless, and he would do what the Gemara says, Yoshev Drushas B'Kagadu Shel Dofi. He would take them and make useless drushas. Hayomer Lohayol Moshe Lichtov Achaz on Timna. Moshe only had to write that the sister of Lotan was Timna, meaning just irrelevant information, seemingly, and he, who was someone who brought the entire nation to Avodah Zarah, part of his big campaign against the Torah were these parshios. There's so much useless information, seemingly useless information there. V'aniyo diachal klavach echad. So Rambam says, I'm going to tell you a rule. V'ashiv acharkach el pratim. Then we'll go back to the details. Kasher asisi v'taymus. As I've done with many of the reasons of mitzvos. So he says, da. Every story you find in the Torah is for a necessary benefit in the Torah. There's no extra information, nothing is extraneous, nothing is redundant, nothing is just details that aren't important, everything is important. So it could be it's coming to show the truth of a fundamental of Torah. Or it's coming to teach us how to act so there isn't any sort of corruption amongst people. So every story of the Torah is giving us some sort of yisod and hashkafa, some way to look at the world, to look at Yiddishkeit, to look at Hashem, or teaching us some way that we should learn how to act. And I'm going to explain it all, the Rambam says. Kashareisa pina ha-Torah she'olam mechudesh v'asher nivra t'chila ha'ish echa min ha-adam. So you know that the world began with creation, and then there was a human being created, who Adam Rishon. So Rambam is going to give an example. And this is not a discussion for tonight, but it's nice to see an example. He's looking at the story of Parshas Noach. He wants to know, why does Torah go through at length to discuss the descendants of Noach, and where they lived, and who their names were? What's the point of that story? So he says, well, we know that the world began with one human being, and it's only 2,500 years between Adam and Moshe Rabbeinu. So if all we knew was that there was Adam and then there was Moshe, we'd have a question. We'd say, I don't understand. Not so much time has elapsed. And the world began with one human being, and now they're scattered all about the globe. And there's millions of people. Well, how did that occur in such a short amount of time? How did they scatter in that way? Mishpachos chalukos, v'lshonos chalukos, rechokos mo'od. And there's many, many families, and there's many languages. Migdal Bavel is where the languages came from. V'husar asafik azeh biyachsam kulam zichron histafim. So the Torah has to go back and tell us, well, I can tell you exactly how it happened. I could tell you where the people scattered about. I could tell you why the languages are different. I could tell you where the numbers came from. V'zachor shmos, and before some of them, we even mentioned the names of the famous people, because when you give a name, a detail, that makes it more of a reality to us. Ploni, we tell you how long they lived. Hagim, makom, shchenam, where they lived. But Tama maybe list Pasram Maksavas Arts, and we explain why they got scattered about. The reason why their languages are different, why they have different languages. In the beginning, it was one place and one language. Because it should have been that way if they're all from one ancestor. They should be the whole world lived in one area and had one language. How did things scatter about? That's the story. So the Rambam, Kedarko, the Rambam usually takes something and give a very, very pshat-oriented meaning to it, which is also very important to have. But the Rambam's main point here, which I think is really a yesod, understanding Torah, is that there is nothing in Torah which is there as an extra detail. Nothing is means, nothing is extraneous. Nothing is just, you know, we're just telling stories. Everything has its meaning, he says, for one of two reasons. Either to teach us a yesod about Torah, or to give us some way that we should approve our own actions. One of those two things. And the Rambam's yesod, I think, is what will carry us through this entire discussion. Because every single story, every pasuk, every letter has to be of that same nature, that it has meaning and content behind it. To take it further, Rambam says elsewhere, I don't have the copy here, he speaks about how every single word of the Torah has the same kedusha. You know, you take a Torah scroll, and whether it's the Shin of Shema Yisrael, or it's the Aleph of Achos Lot and Timna, as he quoted over here, if anything's missing, it's puzzle. In terms of kedusha, they're all the same. In terms of their infinite meaning, they're all the same. So on a surface level, we think Shema Yisrael is like, that's the most important, and who was the sister of Lotan seems to be like kind of down in the list. But in terms of its kedusha and its infinite depth, they're all the same. There's no difference. And if one of those letters is missing, it doesn't matter which one, the entire Torah scroll is puzzle. You can't use it, you can't learn from it, it has to go in Geniza. Because I think very often, the more mysterious or more redundant a pasuk seems, the deeper it goes. I mean, if you delve into it, you'll find much more meaning. Something that has a meaning on the surface, so, okay, it's easy. It's a surface-level meaning, and that fits with me, and I understand it. I don't need to go deeper. When something seems to be mysterious, or strange, or funny, or childish, so that tells you you have to delve in deeper, and you'll find something even more amazing there. And I think that's an experience we all have to have when it comes to learning Torah. So don't open our eyes and see the fact that Torah is Dvar Hashem, and that every single letter, every single word, every single nuance means something. That can change our entire outlook in Torah. Now, l'havdil, now you have scholars who spend lifetimes on Shakespeare's writings. And they'll take a play of Shakespeare, and they'll read it line by line, and they'll make diukim. They'll try to figure out what's that nuance, why is that word there, what's he trying to display, what's he trying to portray with this, what was the character thinking, what was Shakespeare doing with this, and they'll spend decades and decades, and put out also scholarly works on Shakespeare. So if they're doing that for Shakespeare, you know, lahavdil, certainly the Torah is the Dvar Hashem, infinitely more important, infinitely more chachma, you know, to give it its time and really look at it with much more depth than a person look at Shakespeare, I think is very important. As it says in Avos, the more you turn it over and you dig into it, you'll find everything in Torah. So we can't ignore that. So that's one idea which is very important to keep in mind as we embark on the next discussion. The second point is that we have to know Torah has many layers. So different Sfarim describe, you know, layers of Torah in different ways. It's really hard to pinpoint, you know, layer by layer what something means. But what I mean by this is the following. You know, there's a famous idea referred to as pardes, which stands for Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod. Pardes literally means an orchard, but they take it as an acronym, Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Sod, which is four different ways to approach Torah. The source of that breakdown is not so clear. Many, many Sfarim use that source. So what that means is that every single idea of Torah will definitely present itself on four levels. The Pshat level is the simple meaning. So let's just take a very simple example. You know, Avraham Avinu was a person, he lived, he died, and that's 100% a historic fact, and that's Pshat. It says that Avraham went to Eretz Yisrael, so that means a person, Avraham, went from our custom to Eretz Yisrael. And that's Pshat, and that's what it means, and that's 100% MS, and we gain from that. That's one level. You move to another level, so let's say a level of Drush, for instance. So very often you'll say, like a Medrash or a Gemara might look at a Pasuk and say, well, why was that word used about Avraham? It's trying to tell you something deeper about Avraham. So make a Drusha. It tells you more about Avraham's past or about Avraham's thoughts. So that's something which is not in the pshat level, but based on an inference being made, a word being used, you know, some connection to another pasuk, we can draw out more information. So that would be the world of drush. So every pasuk is going to have that. As you move deeper, you get into the idea of remez, or idea of sod. So I guess just to take our example, we're talking about Avraham. So in the world of sod, Avraham represents the meat of chesed. So the world of sod is more, you know, these are deeper Kabbalistic ideas, kind of far beyond us. But just to know that when you're reading about Avraham, you're not just reading about a human being named Avraham, you're also reading about the meat of chesed of Hashem, and how chesed interacts with our world. And those psukim in the Torah, on a sod level, will have a whole different meaning. It's going to connect to the pshat, meaning that Avraham went to Eretz Yisrael would mean something about chesed interacting with Eretz Yisrael in some way, I guess. But it's a whole different layer of meaning. You peel off the layers, and you see another layer of meaning there. Remez, for instance, again, I'm just using this example. You know, what would be a remez? Remez means some sort of hint, some sort of allusion. So Avraham, again, just one example. Avraham, the name Avraham is Gematria Ramach, Resh Mem Ches, 248, which the Torah says is the amount of limbs in the body. Ramach Yevarov. So there's some remez in Avraham to the limbs of the body, and as you hear Avraham, there's going to be some sort of, you know, ideas of how that connects with the limbs of the body. But you see, there's a person named Avraham, in the Peshat level, historically he lived, and he died, and he went places, and he ate, and he slept, and that's Avraham on the Peshat level, but the Torah is Hashem's word, and every single way the Torah presents Avraham is coming to present ideas to us on much deeper levels as well. You find very often, even in the world of Pshat, you might find a machlokus. What happened? You know, did Avraham do X or did he do Y? And we'll go through. We have Rishonim, Rashi, or the Ramban, or Ibn Ezra, and they'll have a machlokus of what actually happened here. So on a Pshat level, in the world of reality, only one thing can happen. In the world of reality, either Avraham, you know, went left or he went right. One of the two. He didn't do both. One Risha might say he went left, one Risha say he went right, and only one's going to be right on a pshat level. But on a conceptual level, if the Risha is somebody who's working off of the psukim, based on Masorah, with Yerushimayim, so there's going to be an element of truth to the other idea as well. Meaning what? Now we have a concept of Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that both are telling you the words of the living God. That's a quote from the Gemara. So which means that again, on a pshat level, only one is right, but on a deeper level, they both can have a meaning. So I'm going to explain that a little bit more as well, because that's an important concept I think that we misunderstand sometimes. Rabbi Lipiansky often gives a mashal about this, and he says that if you want to know, what's the square root of 4? So what's the answer? 2, or there's another answer. Or negative 2. 2 or negative 2. Right? And they're both 100% right. Now, if I'm out trying to plant a patch of zucchini, and I'm trying to figure out the area of my land, so negative 2 is a worthless number to me. So 2. The number 2 is meaningful, but negative 2, it's true in concept. 100%, a mathematician will tell you they're 100% right. But in the world of reality, that number is not going to be very meaningful to me. It doesn't help me figure out the dimensions of my farm. It won't help me do any planning of my buildings. It won't help me at all. But yet, in the world of concept, it's 100% right. So when you have two approaches to pshat, which are Il Vel Divrei Kim Chayim, in the world of reality, one thing happened. One thing. In the world of concept, if the pasuk lends itself to both interpretations, and they both could fit into the text, and they're both being said based on our Masorah and based on Yerushimayim, you could say that concept has a meaning to it, which is emes, even though that may not have actually been what happened in the pasuk, because that's the way the Torah wrote it for a reason. Hashem locks into the pasuk many, many meanings, and that's like it's encoded in the pasuk, so it's meant to be taken in those ways. So Rashi might say one way, and Rambam might say a different way, and they both could be 100% right in terms of emes, in terms of what it means. In terms of what Avraham actually did, or Moshe actually did, obviously only one thing could have happened historically. But in terms of learning Torah, when you learn from it, you can learn from both ideas, because they both can be 100% right in terms of what the Torah is trying to present to us. There's a Gemara in Maseches Tainis. So it says, Yaakov ina lo mes. It says, Yaakov never died. So the other person in the Gemara responds, what do you mean? It says that he was embalmed, that he was buried. You think he didn't die? Well, what could the pasuk mean? So the response back to that was, Mikrani Dorish, I'm just darshaning a pasuk. And what does he mean? Because the pasuk never says, Vayamas, it never says he died. It says, Vayigva, it says that he grew weak. Vayasvel Amav, when he was gathered to his nation, it never says the word Vayamas by Yaakov Avinu. It says that Avraham Vayamas, Yitzchak Vayamas, doesn't say it. So in the way the pasuk presents it, in the world of Pshat, Yaakov died. Because it says they took him and they embalmed him and they buried him. It's very clear that Yaakov died. But in the world of, let's call this the world of Drasha, there is a certain truth being presented by the fact that it doesn't say the word Vayamas by Yaakov, you know. And something we can discuss at a later date, but we have to learn a big lesson from the fact that word is missing. To the point where you can make a statement in the Gemara, Yaakov lomes, Yaakov didn't die. Because it doesn't say it. It doesn't say it in the pasuk. It doesn't say the word Vayamas there. And we have to understand that there's different layers of meaning. So in the world of Pshat, he's dead. Yaakov, we don't think we're going to see Yaakov walking around in the streets today. But in the world of Drush, which is also Emes, which is also real, which is also true, there is some level where we say Yaakov doesn't die. And it has to be understood what that means. There's a famous phrase, Shivim Panim LaTorah, there's 70 faces to Torah. You actually find in Midrashim, you find the number 49 used as well. There's 49 faces, 70 faces, but the Torah is a lot of faces. And we find that it says Moshe Rabbeinu, it says he presented the Torah Be'er Heite very clearly, and Chazal say that he wrote it out in 70 languages, which means, I don't think that the point was he was writing it in Spanish and French and Latin and German. On a much more simple level, it means Moshe portrayed the Torah in ways that can be understood in 70 different ways, that people could take it in 70 different levels. So to open our eyes and see all these levels is a very important exercise in learning Torah, and that's how we really gain from the concept of Torah to the greatest extent, seeing all the levels. But we have to say the pasuk is a code which carries within it so many different layers of meaning. One other source for this, it says in the Gemara, quoting from a pasuk, I think the pasuk's in, I think it's in Kohelis or Mishlei, that pasuk is. It says, Kipatish Yefotzeis Sela, like the way that a hammer would break up a rock. So you take a rock, you take a hammer and smash it, and the little pieces fly everywhere. So it says, so too is a pasuk in the Torah. A pasuk, you take it, and it can be broken up into many, many things. It's the same idea, that the meanings of the psukim can be many. Even though it's one pasuk and one idea, you can find so many meanings in one pasuk. So this is really one of the wonders of Torah. The Torah itself, you know, there's no sefer out there like this, that somebody who is 5 years old, and someone who's 100 years old can take it and gain from it. There's nothing like it. I once heard, I forgot who said this, but I once heard, this is one of the pshats you can find in the Haggadah. It says, in the Haggadah, you have, Baruch HaMalkam Baruch Hu, Baruch Shastra Lamo Yisrael Baruch Hu. So you have that line that praises Hashem for the Torah. And that immediately precedes the Arba Banim. So it goes in, there's four sons, there's a Chacham, and a Rasha, a Tam, and a Dialishal. So, almost any Haggadah you pick up asks the question, what's that line doing there that praises the Torah? Does it seem to add a place in the Haggadah? You know, you're talking about Yitzchak Mitzrayim, you're talking about all the Chesed Hashem did for us, you talk about the Arba Banim asking the questions, and it throws in this line, you know, blessed is Hashem who gave us the Torah. What's it doing there? So one pshat I once saw says the following, that the Torah is the only sefer that has a message for all four sons. I mean, you have a Rasha, and a Chacham, and a Tam, and Lishon sitting in front of you. So usually you say, well, I have to speak to the Chacham in one way, and the Rasha in a different way. So one book will reach out to the Chacham, and one book reaches out to the Rasha. So I'll go to the bookstore, and I'll find, you know, this Makiruv Sefer, and I'll give it to the Rasha, and I'll find some really deep Sefer of different Torah, and give it to the Chacham, and I'll find some simple Sefer to give to the Tam, and initially I'll sit down with the children's book and start explaining things myself. But that's how we would view it. But yeah, that's not how it works. We all take the same book. We take the Chumash. And we take the Chumash and we answer their questions, each on their own level, from the Chumash itself. Because the Chumash is a book that has a message for all four kids from the same exact book. And that's something which is unique. No other book has that. So therefore, we praise the Torah before we get to the four sons to show the Torah is the only book in the world that has this quality that you can speak to all four sons from the same book. So I forgot who said that pshat, but it's a very important point about Torah. To take that further for a second, we know it says in Avos, it's Ben Chamesh LaMikra, that somebody who is 5 years old can learn Mikra, Chumash. It says ben Esther leMishnah. It says ben Chamesh Esrei leTalmud. So the Mishnah gives ages for kids of when they should start learning different parts of the Torah. But the fact that this is ben Chamesh leMikra, that means that a five-year-old should be able to understand the Chumash. So when we talk about the preschool understanding of Chumash, that's also, it's correct, it's not wrong. But it doesn't mean you should stick with that. It means that you can start at 5 years old understanding it, but you build off of that. They say that the Vilna Gaon, at the end of his life, all he learned was Chumash. He learned Kol Torah Kula, and he trained himself to see the entire Torah through the Chumash itself. So he didn't need the Gemara, he didn't need the Mishnayos, he didn't need the Zohar, he didn't need anything, because he could see it all in the Chumash itself. So you take out a Chumash and learn the Psukim, and from the Psukim he would be able to see the entire Torah through these Psukim. So no five-year-old does that. But the five-year-old uses the same Psukim, that five-year-old also gains from it. So you can be a 100-year-old Gadol Hador, you can be a simple five-year-old just starting to learn Chumash in school, but that same exact book has something to offer you, which is important, which is inspiring, which is stimulating. It's all in the same exact book. It's an incredible thing. I don't believe there's any book out there that a five-year-old and a 100-year-old sage would both study. In the secular world, I don't think that would exist. Not that I can imagine. Only the Chumash is like that. It's the only book in the world like that. These are all ideas to show us that we have to approach the Torah in that way. So this is all, I guess, the intro to the upcoming series we want to do, because I want to put it into a certain context. Number one, we want to be able to see that there's a pshat in a pasuk, and a pshat in a story, and the story on the pshat level has to make sense. The story should make sense. Nothing should be weird about a story in the Torah, because it's a pshat. That means it's a historical account, and it should fit in some way. You might find a machlokas in a pshat, so we have to understand, well, where are both ideas coming from? How do they both fit the pasuk? And how can they both, you know, be true, at least on a conceptual level? Then to understand that there's layers of understanding a story. It's not just the simple story which occurred, but there's much more behind it. The surface layer is merely the surface, and we have to be able to go beneath the surface. And then also, you find out there, and this bothers me, people get very, very cynical sometimes when you try to explain an idea of the Torah, a story in the Chumash, you know, with a deeper idea. You say, it doesn't really mean that. Really, there's a deeper idea to explain this. People say, yeah, sure, but what about the Pshat? Where does it go? And the answer is, well, the Derech of Torah is that you have layers. And sometimes the pshat may not be the main purpose of that pasuk. Maybe that pasuk is there mainly to get you to the deeper idea. There is a pshat as well, but we can't ignore that they're all connected. There's no one layer which is more important than the next. They're all important, they're all true, and they're all real. It's just a matter of being able to put it all into our own, and sort it out in our minds in the context. It's something which you have to train your mind to do and appreciate the Torah with that depth. So as you look at the psukim, the Mefarshim, especially Midrashim, have this problem. People look at Midrashim as very childish things. And Midrashim contain within them, you know, layers and layers of wisdom and secrets of Torah, which they have to be uncovered. In the past few hundred years, is really when we've had so many different Gedolim who have written Svarim about these things. Maral, I guess, was the first one to bring it out into the open in recent times. You know, but to this very day, it's become Babalei Machshava. This is what they do. They take words of Chazal and they'll open them up. You know, they'll give you the key to understand what is the real message here, which goes beyond the simple story that you heard when you were 5 years old. There's so many complexities and facets of it, which brings so much depth. So if you have the pages in front, I'm going to go through two other pieces here, which I think are very relevant to this discussion. So we did the first piece in the Rambam. If you turn to the next page, it begins with the words psicha. So this is a piece from Sifsei Chaim, Chaim Friedlander. And this is, they put out, in recently, the past few years, they put out his Divrei Torah on the Parsha. And as a psicha, as an introduction to that Sefer, they printed this piece which he once taught about how to approach the Chumash, which very much relates to what we're talking about. So I'm going to read through it together. It's a little bit long, but I think there's a lot here which we can gain from. He says, "Kishabayim lizbonim parshas Torah." When you want to think about the Torah, "Benosim shonim," different topics, "Uvefrat chetaya avos veshvatim," in particular, the sins of the avos or of the shvatim, Dor HaMidbar, the sins of the Dor HaMidbar. Yesh L'da'asas HaAvana HaMuka Shehodvarim. So you have to know what is the depth of the intent of these the stories. Asur L'Havanas HaDvarim HaAvana Shidchis Reduda. You can't understand it with a very superficial way. V'hetem L'mabat Shulanu Osa Maisim. The way that we look at these mice, I mean, we look at these sins as very, very petty. People are very, very weak. They gave in to their lusts or desires. We can't understand what they did. And you can't view it that way. I understand. I can read the words. I can read the pasuk. I can translate it. And that's what it says. So why should I think any differently? No, you look at, for instance, obviously the very first sin of Adam and Chava. You go past that, you look at Yehuda and Tamar, you look at the story he's going to mention about Reuven and Bilhah, you look at the Chida Egel. There's so many stories there which, on the simple level, we seem to understand what they did. In our minds, we say, how could they do such a thing? These are holy people, what did they do? Ulaiba Medinosa, Noah getting drunk in his tent, all these stories. Ulaiba Medinosa, Cheros, Esfasim, Hiacheros, Kashlam, Mohammed, Esfasim, so say, well, maybe in other countries, like he's speaking in Israel, where they don't know Hebrew so well, they don't understand what the Torah is describing. What's the problem? I get what it says. Everything's very clear. As long as I know the language, why can't I just translate it and know what it says? But rather, when we approach the Torah, we have to know that we can't just understand it based on our simple understanding and based on our own concepts. We have to put it into a different context. And he gives two important points about this. Aleph. Zarech l'das ma'i kamas to Torah. We have to know, what is the Torah's intent? Kol mila b'Torah ein la rak perish hamiluli. Every word in the Torah is not just, doesn't just have a literal translation. Kol mila hu mevatas is a musag. A word can be expressing an entire concept. And that word could be an expression of an idea beyond the translation. Just like, for instance, we'll learn about the story of Adam and Chava and the Nachash. So if we just think Nachash means just some little old snake, then we missed the boat. Nachash obviously is a much bigger concept. Chazal compared the Nachash to the Yetzer Hara. Amalek is compared to the Nachash. Esav is compared to a Nachash. Nachash is not just a little snake slithering around and tricking them. Nachash is a whole world to itself. We have to understand what's that concept that the Torah is referring to. Even discussing, let's say, Avraham. He was a human being, a very important human being. But Avraham stands for an entire concept. It's a world Avraham stands for. The world of Chesed, the world of Emunah, the world of being able to leave Avodah Zarah and enter into Emunah and Hashem. I mean, there's so much more that Avraham stands for beyond just some guy named Avraham who discovered Hashem. And every concept like that. The Torah is not just words, it's not just people. There's concepts. There's entire philosophies and entire worlds behind every single word. It could be it's expressing an entirely different idea. You have to know what is the Torah intending to mean by this word. So we have to very often come on to the interpretations of Torah Shebal Peh. Kenei Gemaros and Midrashim, whether it be the Gemara or Midrashim, ad Parshini Chumash, until we get to the Rishonim, explain the Chumash from the Achronim to understand what's happening. So just to take it and translate it at surface level, we're missing the boat. We're missing everything that it means. There's so much more. That's number one. Number two, he says, V'sar Chodas B'mima Dober. You have to know, well, who is the topic of the conversation? He's talking in particular about the chatayim, the sins which we find in the Chumash, which is something that needs discussion. Every single one of them needs discussion. But he says you have to know who are these people. We're talking about people on very lofty levels. Avos HaKadoshim.
They must have scored. I'm sorry.
Avos HaKadoshim. Shaleim Amru Chazal Avos Hena Merkava. The Avos, it's said about the Avos that they are the chariot, they are the resting place of the Shechina. And if it says that Avraham sinned, or Yaakov sinned, or Yitzchak sinned, it's more than just us. Shiftei Ka, the Shvatim are called Shiftei Ka. These are the Shvatim of Hashem. This is the basis of Klal Yisrael. and to think that they're just petty people, you know, they're jealous and they sold their brother. There's much more to the story, obviously. Because we still look at them as if they caught us. They did something which we would never dream of doing. You know, killing a sibling and selling a sibling, we would never dream of such things. And they did it. Maybe we did dream of such things. I guess when kids are kids sometimes, and you know, as they get on each other's nerves, that could happen too. But Moshe Aaron Dordea v'Golam Rigosim Ma'aseh Matovim. So we have to know that the greatness of the level they're on, that's their deeds that they do. So we have to look at them based on their level, from their perspective. So if you just read it at face value, you're also missing the boat, because you have to think, wait a minute, how could it say that the Shvatim attempted to kill Yosef, sold Yosef as a slave, and then referring to them as holy people who are the resting place of the Shechina and the builders of Klal Yisrael? That doesn't fit. Something is off right there. It doesn't make any sense. It says about Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe, we know he hit the rock, but the Torah says that Moshe didn't have emunah on Hashem. Yan lo hamantim bi. He didn't have emunah. If you want to think, who in the world in history had the most emunah of anybody? Moshe Rabbeinu. He spoke to Hashem peh al peh. He didn't have emunah. What does that mean exactly? So we have to look at those. Let's put it in a context. I'm saying, who is this person? And what does the Torah mean? But what it describes about the Avos, or about the great people in the Chumash, so whatever they did on their level, that was called an Avera, but it's not describing what we call an Avera. Meaning what Moshe Rabbeinu did, on our level, may have been a mitzvah. It's been totally fine. On Moshe Rabbeinu's level, he's blamed, and blamed to the extent that he's called Yeno Muna and me, and not allowed to Eretz Yisrael. But it's not, we can't look at that from our perspective, that's from his perspective. From our perspective, it could be what he did was no issue at all. One example of this, which is something that we want to think about. You know, Yosef is in prison, and he asks the Tsar, Hamashkim, you know, when you go back to Paro, please put in a good word for me and save me. And Chazal come in and they say that Yosef had no bitachon, he should have done that, he should have waited there for Hashem to save him. And everyone always asks the question, well, Hashem has many, many shluchim. I'm sure everyone's heard the famous joke about the guy on the roof. You know, everyone knows that joke. I'm not going to go through the joke again. But the helicopter comes. I sent you the helicopter, sent you the boat. So Hashem sent him the Saramashkim. And you read the story, the way the Chumash portrays it, and it sounds like, hey, look at the Hashem sent him a messenger to save him. You see the Hashkacha there. But Chazal come in and they berate Yosef for lacking in bitachon. And you wonder, well, what do you mean? If Hashem sends me someone who can help me when I'm in prison, we would put it in a Pesach Chromebook, the Shkacha Pratis. That's what we would do with it. And then Chazal came and say, no, Yosef did a terrible thing. He's punished. He's staying 2 years more in prison because of it. And the answer is, well, the Beis Halevi speaks about this, that Yosef on his level had to have a whole different set of rules for his bitachon. And on our level, what Yosef did was 100% appropriate, and it was worthy of saying, Hashkacha Pratis, Hashem save me. But on Yosef's high, high level, to put any faith in a human being may have been out of line. But that's only from his perspective, not from our perspective. And we have to put everything in that perspective. He brings the example, Dr. Reed it all inside, just due to the time. He brings the example next of Reuven. It says that Reuven went, Vayishkav es Bilha Pilegesh Aviv. And he slept with Bilha Pilegesh, his father's concubine, his father's wife. So that sounds like a terribly, terrible act, you know. It's an adultery, it's his father's wife, it's an incestual act, it's a terrible act. But yet the Torah goes on, and Reuven is one of the Shvatim, and you know, if someone did that in modern days, they would be ousted from, I mean, it's a horrible, horrible thing. And Chazal say, well, wait a minute, if you say that Reuven was Chote, you're making a mistake. He didn't sin at all, and really Rashi says it, that he didn't actually, there was no actual immoral act, rather he just switched around her bed. Her bed, Yaakov's bed, was in Bilhah's tent, and he took the bed and put it into Leah's tent. That's all he did. But the Torah portrays it in a very, very, in a very surprising way. V'yishkav es Bilhah Pilegesh Aviv. So it's very, very clear from the Chumash itself that it can't mean what it says it means. Why? Because Reuven is still included in the Shvatim. Yaakov, when he gives him Musar at the end of his life, he just tells him, you know, you act a little bit hasty, you're a little bit too hasty. If he had done what the Torah said, literally, then Yaakov would be a little more upset, I think, than what he told him. And it's very clear that's not what it means. But yeah, the Torah portrays it as a terribly severe act. And why is that? So he explains as well, again, I'm skipping down, but he explains, based on Reuven's level, what he did had the severity of that act. He didn't do the act as the Torah describes it. That's something which would be beyond the Shiftei Ka. But just moving around those beds in the Alpi Emes had such a severe result based on the level of Yaakov, the level of Reuven, it was portrayed in such a terrible way. So it's funny, because sometimes we say, well, are we just covering up for him? You know, are Chazal coming in to sugarcoat what actually happened? And the answer is the other way around. The Torah is not covering for him, it's the other way. You know, we're looking at it from our perspective. The Torah is actually telling you he did something that wasn't so bad, and the Torah is making it much worse. Then we have to flip it around. What he did, in our minds, moving around on bed, it was a little bit of a chutzpah to his father, you know, he's a little out of line, but it's not all that bad. The Torah comes in and portrays it as much worse than it actually was. So it's the other way around, because the Torah is trying to portray it based on how Kosh Baruch Hu viewed it from his perspective, even though it wasn't, from our perspective, all that bad. So we have to, these layers of the Chumash have, you know, there's a lot of depth to them which we have to be able to draw out. Let me skip down to the bottom paragraph. Be'etzem. Be'etzem nira be'inenu is a avera yesh pekach shehevyer mitosum ol bilal ol me'leya. What was the big avera that Reuven moved the bed from Bilal's tent to Leah's tent? Like, what was so bad about that? Amla kishmadubar al Yaakov, you know, b'chir shabbos, but Yaakov, we know, Chazal say was the choice of the Avos. He was the most chashiv of all the Avos. Me'idach b'Reuven ben b'chor shechen. Reuven was the b'chor. Reuven was the firstborn of Yaakov. Reuven should be at a very high level. And Reuven, in some way, he the word paga, like, I don't say attacked, but he somehow detracted from the Shechinah of Yaakov. Yaakov was the place where the Shechinah rested. The Shechinah rested in Yaakov's tent. And when you start messing with Yaakov's tent, then you're messing with the Shechinah itself. L'chein Torah mishtemeshes because they're Lashon Chor. So the Torah uses such a sharp language, v'yishkav Reuven, a language of adultery. Because when you look at this story in a proper way, a maisa so small can have many, many very, very serious ramifications when you're dealing with big people. So we have to know the Torah, when it says things, is dealing with it from the perspective of the people involved, and not the way we'd understand it in our own minds. I'm going to skip down to the last paragraph here. So the Torah describes an avla, a sin, which in our minds is not that bad. This is so we can understand how the Torah speaks. The situation is flipped around. It's not sugar-coated, but it's expressing its true severity of a very, very simple act, a somewhat innocent act, which starts showing how severe it was based on Reuven's standing. So when we approach Torah, we can't use our simple understanding to understand these people. Torah and its explanation is given to us as a Mesorah, generation to generation. And the Torah comes along with Torah Shebal Peh. You can never separate Torah Shebal Peh and Torah Shebichsav. You know, the Gemara says that people are so foolish, and they stand up for a Sefer Torah, not for a Talmud Chacham. Whereas the Talmud Chacham could come and tell you, you know, let's take, for example, you know, it says in the Torah, an eye for an eye, and the Gemara says, no, you don't do an eye for an eye, really it means you pay monetary compensation. You take out someone's eye, you do not take out the other person's eye. If you did it, you yourself would be a sinner. What the Bezin has to do is charge money for it. So the Torah is one thing, and the rabbis can tell us that's not what it means. So who do you stand up for? The Torah means stand for both, but that's the idea. The Torah says that you give 40 lashes to a sinner, and the rabbis make a drasha, it means actually 39 lashes. That's the Gemara's example of this. So who do you stand up for? And we don't say, oh, the rabbis are changing the Torah, they're overruling the Torah. That's not what it means. It means the Torah came along at Har Sinai with Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh, and they worked together as one. Neither is more significant than the other. They go together, and the Pshat and Torah requires both. They both have to be said. And he continues, and he says, "His karnu This is just one example. So notice in one of Mabat Ichashiva Sa'adam Madrigasu Kaveh Machriya Kazmazachiv Chamras. This is a perspective on how the Chashiva Sa'adam, the importance of a person and his level, is actually that which determines the severity of the chait. The Torah Tavas Migdolenu Bimloha Chumra al Devarim Shinirim Veinu Kiputim. The Torah demands of our Gedolim in a very demanding way on small things which are seem to be meaningless in our eyes. Bimloha Chumra, but the Torah gives them a full severity. He Vetochsha God loosed them because they're so great. Tov Mosam Achumras HaDevarim. The Torah is being Toveya them. The Torah is demanding from them based on the Chumra. There's a whole page of Gemara that goes through people who sinned in the Tanakh. And says, if you think they actually sin, you're making a mistake. If you say that Reuven sinned, it's a mistake. If you say that David sinned, you're making a mistake. If you say that Shlomo sinned, you're making a mistake. It gives more examples. Shmuel's sons, a few examples given there. And those examples are funny, because on the one hand, it says, if you say that David was Chote, you're making a mistake. He wasn't really Chote. But if you pick up your Sefer Shmuel, David himself says, Chatasi. Now, the Navi comes to him and says, you know, how dare you do this? He says, I have sinned. So how can David say, I have sinned? And then the Gemara says, David didn't really sin. What does that mean? And the answer is, David may have sinned, but not in the way you think he sinned. You know, what David did on his level, the way the Nach describes it, was adultery with Bathsheba. But the Gemara says that's not actually what happened. She wasn't really a married woman at the time. The Gemara explains why. It's just that being that he was David HaMelech, we hold him to higher standards. And what he did, which was actually essentially allowed, the Navi describes it as an adulterous relationship. But every example has to be looked at in that way. We're not sugarcoating it from Chazal's end. Rather, the Torah is giving you the severity of the act. The Torah is telling you how severe what he actually did. I think we'll stop here in this piece. But that's... See, he's giving us two important points to how you have to view the Torah. Number one is that the language used, don't just translate and say, oh, I know what it means. No, I read the words, I read the art scroll, I know exactly what happened here. We can't fool ourselves, because that is the translation, but it's indicating something much deeper than that. And then number two, you have to put it sometimes into context. Who are the people involved? How did it happen? When did it happen? Do I think the Torah means, as being described, in its simple form, or maybe there's something more happening here? And usually that's where Chazal open our eyes. Chazal tell us what you think's happening is not really what happened, and this is what really happened, and this helps understand it. But our job is to put it all together. Our job is to say, well, the Medrash says X and the Pasuk says Y. Well, how does that fit together and create, you know, one clear scene and one clear idea of what happened here in the Torah? So that's the piece of Pesach Chaim. There's one more piece here I wanted to share, the last page. This is a quote from the Zohar. I copied it. This is from a sefer I had. It's called Torah Misina. He quotes this as an example. And it's an easy way to look at it, because he gives the original Aramaic and also the Hebrew translation, which is a little more simple for us to understand. There's a long quote from the Zohar. I'm not going to go through the whole quote from the Zohar either. But let's look at on the left side. It has the Hebrew translation, so we don't have to struggle through the Aramaic. Even though the Zohar itself is in Aramaic, so we're going through a translation over here. He says, "Amar Rabbi Shimon, Vayla Oso Adam Sheomer." Rabbi Shimon says, "Oy to the person that says, Ki Torah Ba Laharos Sipurim Stam." The Torah is telling us stories, Divrei Hidyotos, and simple ideas. Shimkein Afilu Bezman Hazeh. Because that was the case, even nowadays, Ani Chom Lasos Torah B'Divrei Hidyotos. I could also write Torah too. The Torah is telling stories. And telling us simple ideas. We can all write our own Torah. Let's sit down and just start writing out stories. We can do it, you know, with nice fancy wording and poetic. I can make nicer stories. You know, we could probably write more beautiful poetry than the Torah. You know, at least in our minds. V'imaharos devarim stam, afil osam moshli olam yeshpen devarim ulam yoser. And if just to show us things which happened, well, some people in the world have greater things that happened. You know, the stories about Abraham are great, but you could find people out there that did other great things. You know, that doesn't mean that what Abraham did in terms of the Pshat and the Torah is the greatest thing ever. It doesn't mean that necessarily. And if there's greater people out there, then let's follow them and write a Torah about them. Like, why do we have to focus so much on David HaMelech? Let's go find someone else who's a big tzaddik and focus on him. Rather, all the words of Torah are high things, and their sodos, their secrets. Sipra the Torah, Levosha Torahu. The stories of the Torah are merely the clothing of the Torah. So there's a term used, a Kabbalistic term used very often called Levush, which is literally clothing. But it means, you know, my clothing is not me. You know, my clothing is the way I present myself to the world, but there's a lot more me behind my clothing. And the Torah has layers. So the outer layer is Levush. It's the clothing of the Torah. And we're seeing one layer of the Torah, how the Torah presents itself. But that's not the only part. If you think all I am is my clothing, then you're missing who I am. If you think the Torah is just its clothing, but there's so much more behind it, we're just seeing it from the outer layer. Sipor zeh shel Torah levush haTorahu mishechosh shel levush hazeh hu Torah mamash. You think that the levush is all the Torah that there is. Lo davar acher, there's nothing else. Tipach rucho, that person should bloat. It's a same chazal use, kind of like, you know, that person's way off. Vo yeh lo chela v'lom haba. L'vicham ardavet, so David said, gal enai v'bita nifolos Torah. David said that, let me reveal my eye, let my eyes reveal and see the wonders of your Torah. Mashe mitachas levush, I want to see what's beneath the layers. I want to see the depth. Bo'arei, yesh levush ner l'kol. V'tipshim k'shem ro'in adam levush ner l'hem yafe. Eina mistakon yoser. Chosh levush ze aguf, chosh ner shaguf v'nasham. He says that people are foolish out there, and they kind of mess things up. And they think, well, the outer layer of the clothing is kind of like the guf, and the guf is like the neshama, and they miss the fact that there's a guf and neshama behind the clothing. We don't have to go more through this. And there's even an idea said, it's interesting. I forgot who says this, but, you know, sometimes we wear clothing, so you have like an outer garment, and then you'll see, like, you know, I have my jacket, and then I have my shirt under it. So you get a glimpse of the next layer from the outer layer. Now the Torah gives you the outer layer. Sometimes you can get a glimpse of the next layer even from the outer layer. Every layer should lead up to the next layer. And then we do that in terms of fashion and style, but that's portraying a certain reality that levush can mean. Sometimes I see layers from within one layer, I can kind of see into the next layer.
Concealing is revealing.
That's one way to put it. So that's a quote from the Zohar, which obviously the Zohar is portraying to us the element of soul of the Torah. But showing us is, don't think, you know, the Torah is much more than that. Don't think that there's nothing more than the outer layer which you're looking at. And again, it applies to the Chumash, it applies to Midrashim, it applies to Gemara, it applies to everything. Because everything we see on a simple level is merely an outer layer, and there's much more behind it. So this is the idea. When I say that we're going to talk about what really happened, so what really happened, you know, there's a lot of ways to describe what really happened in a story in Chumash. You could take one line in one story and you can break it down into layers and layers of meaning. You know, there's so much you can take from it. The second half we were discussing is, what does it mean to me, which is what the Rambam said, that every single part of the Torah has to have its takeaway. It's not just going to remain out there that this is what it might mean, but there has to be some sort of lesson, whether it be a hashkafa to gain from it, or whether it be a practical piece of advice of how to act or what to do. But every part of Torah has that application. It could be a halacha, it could be in midos, it could be in hashkafa, but there has to be something that we're going to apply from the Torah. So that's the introduction. Just that I want to do, starting next week in Meretz Hashem, you know, Bereishis is, you know, Bereishis could take years and years to learn, and I don't want to go through everything in Bereishis. And the truth is, you can't even understand a lot of the creation itself. The Chazal tells you can't understand a lot of it. But what I noticed, I want to go through together, is that if you look at creation, every day of creation is something that seemingly, quote-unquote, went wrong. And you'll see what I mean. You know, the first day, it says that Hashem made, Rashi says Hashem made light and saw that he didn't want it to be for the Rishayim and hid it away for the Tzadikim. So Hashem took away the light he made and put it elsewhere and brought it new light. On the second day, it says that the trees didn't listen. They're supposed to have bark that tasted like the fruit, and they didn't listen, and they made bark taste like bark, and fruit tasted like fruit. Actually, it's the third day. Second day, it says that Hashem, he split between the upper and lower waters, and lower waters got upset because they wanted to be up in the heavens, and Hashem promised them, don't worry, you'll get your chance to go up as well. But every day, there was something that seemed to be like a mishap, and Hashem had to come in and take it away, fix it. So I want to look through those instances in Bereishis, at least understand the actual creation we can't understand so much. But if Chazal portrayed us in some way that every day had its mishap, we have to figure out, well, what does that mean? Like, Hashem didn't make a mistake. There wasn't Hashem, oops, you know, I better fix it up. There has to be some deeper idea behind those quote-unquote mishaps. That'll be our first topic next week. Okay.
Thank you.